Hello, and welcome to Ox Talk, your weekly talking local news, this Tuesday, the 10th of October, 2023. Sunrise is at 20 past 7, and sunset at 20 past 6. Your readers this week are Janet Proudman and Alison Soskis. The USB memory stick copying and distribution is by Michelle Lawful.
Aerated concrete has been found in a building on Oxford's Churchill Hospital site. Members of the Buckinghamshire, Oxfordshire and Berkshire West NHS Integrated Care Board's governing body were told that RAAC had been found at the Churchill Hospital. Chief Estates and Facilities Officer at Oxford University Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust, Mark Holloway, said the amount found on the Churchill site was very small. Having established the level of risk, the identified RAAC is currently safe to remain in place, but will be inspected regularly. Our sites remain safe for all our staff, patients and visitors, he said.
Severn Trent Green Power had applied to install a lightning protection mast at its plant near Cassington prior to the explosion on Monday night. A huge fire broke out at the processing facility at 7:20 p.m. on Monday after lightning struck a digester tank and ignited the biogas inside. It came 8 months after the company received permission from Charwell District Council to install a 22-metre-high metal column, which was intended to divert lightning strikes away from the plant. Mystery surrounds whether it was ever installed, as the company did not immediately respond to a request for a comment. Yarnton Parish Councillor Ian Middleton said he had spoken yesterday to an operations manager from the company, whom it was hoped would meet with the parish council in due course and offer reassurances about the safety of the plant. He said he would be more concerned about public safety if the plant was closer to homes. In terms of them, the anaerobic digesters, being very close to residential areas, I would have some worries, he said, but I think the location of the one at Worthen is not a big concern. He added that green bin collections are not expected to be affected. The Green Party councillor said he had not initially noticed the explosion on Monday night. We looked out of the window and saw a very orange glow in the sky. It was around about sunset time, so we thought that's a nice sunset and went outside to have a look, he said. By the time we got outside, it was gone. Then I started to get all the notifications saying there had been a huge explosion and flames shooting up in the sky. We contacted the emergency services and waited to see what had happened. I didn't think it was one of those situations where they wanted to have councillors appearing at the scene. Other councillors and politicians praised the reaction of emergency services to the incident. Liz Leffman, the leader of Oxfordshire County Council, said, "Top marks to the emergency services for being so on the scene so quick. I live in Charlbury and I heard it. I thought it was a thundercloud, and the lights went off and on. It must have been very distressing for those who were nearby. I don't think they should be concerned about safety. It was just one of those freak events." The plant falls in the Oxford West and Abingdon constituency of MP Leila Moran, who said, "This was an extremely distressing incident for residents in the surrounding area. I'm incredibly glad that no one was injured. I want to extend huge thanks to our amazing emergency workers for all they've done to contain the fire and keep local residents safe."
Blenheim Palace in Oxfordshire is the most popular place for wedding pictures in the UK, according to one social media platform's users. The Woodstock stately home has been revealed as the most Instagrammed wedding venue from data collected this week. This puts the Duke of Marlborough's estate ahead of Grade 1 listed Hampton Court Palace in the London Borough of Richmond and Leeds Castle in Kent. Blenheim Palace, a UNESCO World Heritage site since 1987, has set the scene for film series including Harry Potter and James Bond. The Instagram study was conducted by Yorkshire-based printing company Aura Print.
A cheap malaria vaccine developed by the University of Oxford has been recommended for use by the World Health Organization. R21/Matrix-M has been developed by the university in partnership with the Serum Institute of India and costs between $2 and $4 per dose. It has undergone clinical trials in the UK, Thailand, and several African countries and was first approved for use in children aged 5 months to 3 in Ghana in April. It has now been backed by the World Health Organization. It is the second malaria jab recommended by the World Health Organization and follows the RTS/AS01 vaccine, which was given the green light by the organization in 2021. It's estimated that almost 500,000 children die of malaria each year in the African region. The World Health Organization said both vaccines are shown to be safe and effective in preventing malaria in children and are expected to have high public health impact.
Four of Oxford Canal's wooden lift bridges will undergo a £650,000 upgrade programme. A familiar part of the Oxfordshire landscape for nearly 250 years, the wooden bridges were built to allow local farmers and residents to cross the newly dug canal. The four bridges being upgraded are among the 19 Grade 2 listed accommodation lift bridges on the Oxford Canal. The Canal and River Trust has been granted listed building consent for the installation of manual hydraulic winding mechanisms, which will enable safer navigational passage for boaters and access across the canal for pedestrians and vehicles. The work will enhance the longevity of the structures. Work on the Chisnell Lift Bridge has been made possible thanks to support from players of the People's Postcode Lottery, while the installations at Shipton, Wolvercote and Perrys are being undertaken as part of the Trust's winter programme of works.
A mental health hospital that has little changed from its origins as an asylum could be replaced with a state-of-the-art new facility. Oxford Health NHS Foundation Trust proposes to build a new mental health hospital and turn the existing Warnford Hospital into a new postgraduate college of Oxford University. Warnford Park could become a world-leading brain sciences campus, providing an integrated clinical mental health care, learning and research facility, states a scoping report submitted to Oxford City Council. It is hoped construction of a research facility and the new hospital, which will provide 132 beds, could begin in 2025, to be completed by 2027. Work on the postgraduate college and student accommodation would begin in 2027 and be completed by 2029. A report prepared by RSK Environment Limited states there will be an appropriate and sensitive approach to the reuse of the listed building and the historic Headington setting will be protected. The mortuary, chapel and lawn will all be retained alongside the lodge, Apple House and former isolation hospital, which are adjacent to the main hospital building. The University of Oxford Department of Psychiatry and the Oxford Centre for Human Brain Activity will also stay as they are. All non-historic hospital buildings, including the main hospital's ancillary buildings and modern additions, will be demolished. The main access will continue to be from Roosevelt Drive, with a new entrance to the south of the existing accesses leading to an underground car park under the new hospital. In a brochure for Warnford Park, Dr. Nick Broughton, CEO Oxford Health, states, "Warnford is a name set to become synonymous with the world-class brain sciences and an unparalleled state-of-the-art mental health hospital fit for the 21st century."
Special offers, live music, cake and community spirit are promised when Gloucester Green Outdoor Market celebrates 10 years under its current operator. Midlands-based LSD Promotions took over running the market on behalf of Oxford City Council in October 2013. And this year, the City Council has granted the company a contract to continue operating it for at least another 5 years. A spokesman said, "This exciting development ensures that we can continue developing the market, supporting loyal and new traders, and fostering a sense of community for the years to come." They added, "When LSD Promotions assumed the responsibility of running the Gloucester Green Market, it faced a challenging time with only one or two street food traders remaining. The market operated solely on Wednesdays and Thursdays, with Wednesday being the charter market and Thursday dedicated to antiques. However, our commitment to rejuvenating this historic market was unwavering. Saturday trading was introduced in 2014 and the market started opening on Friday in 2019. The street food court, selling dishes from around the globe, established around 2017, has become one of the biggest attractions. The company said it was proud to say that some traders have been with us since the beginning, such as Momo King and Gyoza Oxford. Their unwavering commitment has played a vital role in making the market a cherished institution in the heart of Oxford. The market has been trading on the site for 40 years. It had left Gloucester Green for Oxpens in 1932, but after the Oxpens market closed to make way for the expansion of the Oxford College of Further Education, market traders returned to Gloucester Green in 1982. The City Council revealed in March that businesses around Gloucester Green are set to be replaced by a new seating and planting scheme similar to that at Broadmeadow. That's in Broad Street. It is part of the City Centre Action Plan aimed at helping the post-pandemic recovery of Oxford City Centre, which contains proposals to boost the local economy and create new job opportunities and public spaces. No timeframe has been given for its implementation. The Council said in a consultation run in November 2021 on the future of the city centre, residents said they wanted more use of Gloucester Green. The area is identified as an opportunity area in the CCAP, the City Centre Action Plan. LSD Promotions is hosting a celebration with live music and exclusive offers from traders, many of whom will be offering special discounts and promotions for the entire week on Wednesday, October the 11th.
Oxford City Council's continued effort to push new housing into neighbouring districts is facing fierce backlash from council leaders and MPs. Oxford's four neighbouring districts have already agreed to receive thousands of new homes to help meet the city's housing needs. But the City Council will now ask Charwell, West Oxfordshire, South Oxfordshire and Vale of White Horse district councils to accommodate hundreds of extra homes on top of this. The authority admitted that it was a big ask, but the request has been met with widespread opposition from council leaders and MPs who claimed that housing should remain within the city. The decision was criticised by both Leila Moran, MP for Oxford West and Abingdon, and David Johnston, MP for Wantage. Ms Moran said Oxford City Council repeatedly decides to use sites in the city for retail and employment rather than housing, and then claims that it can't deliver the housing the city so desperately needs. If the City Council genuinely believes that these homes are needed, they should use all sites that become available for development to provide them. Neighbouring districts are already obliged to build thousands of homes that the City Council claims it doesn't have room for, adding to the pressure on the already overcrowded transport network. The City Council should put its money where its mouth is. She pointed to the Oxpens development near Oxford Railway Station as a site where more housing could be built. While the City Council and Nuffield College are looking to build hundreds of houses on the site, they have also planned for a new hotel, office space, ecological gardens and an amphitheatre. Ms Moran argued the site should be used entirely for housing. The City Council's planning chief, Louise Upton, defended the Oxbens development and said a balance was needed between housing and employment. She said, "I'd like to emphasise how hard we have looked within the city for available sites. We've talked to almost every landowner there is." The City Council's requests come after new figures revealed that more than 26,000 homes were needed in Oxford by 2040. The city only has the capacity for around 9,500 of these. It means the authority will ask its neighbouring districts to accommodate 2,528 of these homes as part of its draft local plan 2040. It comes on top of the 14,300 homes that the districts have already agreed. South Oxfordshire District Council has agreed to receive houses for Oxford at its developments in Bayswater Brook, Grenoble Road and Northfield, but the leader of the authority refused to accept that any more homes were needed. David Ruan said this would add to the thousands of homes they have already exported to other parts of Oxfordshire as part of the current local plans. "We believe this scale of housing development simply isn't needed, and we want the City Council to engage more effectively with the districts to properly address our concerns. We've had enough of the City Council treating our rural districts as a solution to cover their supposed unmet housing needs, and will continue to argue against their poor and unjustified choices." Bethia Thomas, leader of Vale of Wight Horse District Council, added that neighbouring authorities were being expected to shoulder the burden. She said the City Council had overinflated the number of houses it requires by disregarding the government's standard method to calculate housing need. "The City Council has claimed the government method is wrong and outdated. The authority said its housing density is generally double that of its neighbouring districts and that it made the best use of its land." Ms Upton, who's Cabinet Member for Planning and Healthier Communities, said she could empathise with the concerns of the neighbouring districts. "Of course, it's difficult. They're trying to anticipate their own growth of population, so it's a big ask from us," she said. "We've worked hard to maximise the capacity for building those new homes within our city." But the councillor warned that Oxford had built up to its boundaries. She said the City Council could not build up rather than out because it had a duty to protect the beautiful Dreaming Spires landscape and the views that are a part of our heritage. "We're not going to stick high-rise flats in the middle of Christchurch Meadow," she added. But asked why the City Council had agreed for four apartment blocks of 210 flats to be built in Blackbird Leas, Ms Upton said, "The views of Blackbird Leas are not part of our heritage." Oxford's draft local plan 2040 will go out for public consultation later this month. District councils will be asked to densify existing sites rather than allocate new ones. Ms Upton said the council had not allocated any new sites for employment in the plan.
New research has revealed the world's most iconic film locations, and Oxford University ranks among them for its place in the Harry Potter franchise. A research team has analysed search data online to determine which film locations are the most popular. The study also considered the average hotel costs of the world's most famous film locations to share insights into how much a visit could set back fans of the film. The famous university, which was used to film scenes of Harry Potter, ranked 8th and was the third most searched film location on Google, with almost 8 million searches being made between August 2022 and July 2023. The Collegiate Research University was founded more than 900 years ago in 1096, making it the oldest university in the English-speaking world. Many scenes in the Harry Potter franchise were shot at various Oxford University locations, including the Bodleian Library, New College and Christ Church. Christchurch served as filming locations for various aspects of the films, including the Bodley Staircase and the College Cloisters, which appeared in both The Philosopher's Stone and The Chamber of Secrets. The Philosopher's Stone, Professor McGonagall first meets Harry, Ron and Hermione on the Bodley Staircase in Christchurch. It is also seen in the Chamber of Secrets after Harry and Ron miss the Hogwarts Express train and use the Weasleys' flying car instead, when the duo run up the stairs only to be caught by caretaker Argus Filch. The staircase is also seen later in the movie when Tom Riddle is speaking to Dumbledore about a mysterious death. These cloisters can be seen in the Philosopher's Stone as the Hogwarts hallway where Harry sees the trophy his father won as a seeker in Quidditch. Another important connection that Christchurch has to the Harry Potter films is the famous dining hall. The filmmakers used photos and case studies of the room to replicate and adapt the design to make their own Hogwarts dining hall in the Warner Brothers studios. In The Goblet of Fire, the new college cloisters and courtyard are seen as students walk past wearing Potter Stinks badges after it was assumed he had put his name in the goblet. In the same courtyard, Harry tells Cedric Diggory that the first task they'll face in the Triwizard tournament is dragons. The tree at New College is where Malfoy is transfigured into a ferret by Professor Moody. The Bodleian Library was used for many scenes in the first four movies, including being used as Hogwarts Infirmary. It could be seen again in the infirmary in Prisoner of Azkaban when Harry and Hermione use the Time Turner to save Buckbeak the Hippogriff and Sirius Black. In The Goblet of Fire, it was used again to film Professor McGonagall teaching the students how to dance for the Yule Ball. The Duke Humphreys Library at Divinity School was also in the first film when Harry uses his invisibility cloak to look at the restricted section for information on Nicholas Flamel. The research was carried out by the online gaming company Spin Genie.
Oxford has been ranked second top local authority for recycling rates in the UK, new data shows. The Active Lives survey, which was compiled by the Department for Transport, reveals that 35% of Oxford residents cycle once per week. Cambridge was found to have the highest cycling rates, with at least 50% of people cycling at least once per week. In 2022, the proportion of adults in England reporting cycling at least once per week for any purpose remained similar to 2021 at 9%. At the other end of the spectrum, those in Oldham were found to be cycling the least at just 3%. Provisional data from the Department for Transport shows 5% fewer bikes on the road in June 2023 than a year before. Oxford saw a drop over the same period from 23.2% to 18.6%.
Police went to the scene of a sudden death in Oxford. It happened at a property on the Slade in Headington and involved a man aged 49 who died suddenly following a medical episode. A police spokesperson said, "We attended along with the ambulance service. The death is not being treated as suspicious and a file has been sent to the coroner." Police said they were called about 9:30 in the morning on Saturday, September the 30th. Neighbours reported seeing two police cars and forensic officers were pictured entering and leaving the house yesterday afternoon. Witnesses also said that there had been multiple ambulances at the property. Police maintained a cordon at the house and a police van was parked on the street outside the home for much of the afternoon.
Abingdon's Abbey Cinema has been saved after Town Council signed a new lease agreement with the owners. Ian and Sue Wiper opened the cinema at the Guild Hall in 2018 after some initial screenings at the Unicorn Theatre, and it has been a popular attraction ever since. But this summer, it was thought the cinema could be under threat of closure as talks regarding refurbishment costs dragged on. Now an agreement has been reached and a two-year lease has been signed. Abingdon Town Council released a statement today, Monday, October the 2nd, which said a deal had been struck which will mean the Abbey Cinema continuing to show films, live screenings and other events for the next 2 years. But then it will have to close as a major refurbishment will start. The statement said, following extensive and detailed negotiations, a new two-year lease was signed by representatives of the Town Council and the Abbey Cinema on September the 27th following a short Town Council meeting. The Abbey Cinema will continue to operate for 2 years until the end of August 2025, at which point the building will be closed for a major refurbishment. Leader of Abingdon Town Council, Jim Halliday, said, "I am delighted that we've been able to agree this deal. Councillors have consistently said that we want a cinema to continue in Abingdon, and we've put a lot of time and effort in to get this deal across the line. We have also ensured that the agreement is good value for local taxpayers. The Abbey Cinema will continue to pay a fair rent for the building, with a discount that recognises the good work they do for the local community. As I said at the special town meeting we held in May, I am a passionate believer that there should be a cinema in Abingdon, so I'm very pleased we've come to an agreement. The cinema will need to close in September 2025 to allow for an extensive refurbishment of the Guildhall. The council said it would be investing a significant amount of money on the building and roof to bring it up to standard, including significantly improving its energy efficiency. It added, the time between now and then will be used to make detailed plans for the refurbishment so that the closure can be as short as possible. The time will also be used to agree how the building will be managed in the long term after the refurbishment. The aim is to agree long-term cinema provision. The Abbey Cinema has been showing box office hits combined with some independent films.
Doctors outside the John Radcliffe Hospital apologised to patients as they began their latest strike. But the consultants and junior doctors beginning their three-day walkout said patients should lay the blame at the feet of the government. Speaking on the picket line outside Oxford's largest hospital, hand surgeon Ian McNab accused the government of stonewalling the unions as the pay dispute has dragged on. He said that his colleagues had tried everything short of strikes, claiming ministers were refusing to take steps to resolve the industrial action. The British Medical Association, the union organising strikes, said that its junior doctor and consultant members would only provide Christmas Day levels of staffing. Hospital dentists from the British Dental Association are also set to walk out during the time frame, providing emergency care only. Radiographers at 37 other NH trusts in England, although not in Oxford, were also joining picket lines. Speaking to Times Radio, Chancellor of the Exchequer Jeremy Hunt said the strikes were counterproductive as thousands of pounds were being spent paying for other doctors to cover striking colleagues' shifts. "I don't think we should be taking any risks at all with patient safety," he said. "We've offered doctors an above-inflation pay rise. It wasn't the government's suggestion. It was a suggestion that came from an independent pay review body." Speaking on the picket line, Oxford surgeon Mr. McNab said of his message to patients whose appointments had been cancelled as a result of the latest strikes, "I'd say sorry that we've been pushed to do this. I think you can lay the blame firmly at the door of the Prime Minister and Secretary of State for Health. We have been ready to negotiate. They haven't met with us for 6 months. It's eminently solvable through negotiation." He added, "We don't want to be here on the picket line because we'd rather be treating our patients. But we've seen a 35% pay erosion over the last 15 years or so. and that can't be continued. It's unacceptable. It's the worst in the public sector. It's the worst in the private sector. And we need to have that corrected. The reason we've got to this situation is because what is supposed to be an independent pay review process has failed every year because it has been interfered with by the government. We've tried all the normal routes, tried everything short of strikes. The government has remained intransigent and not taken any steps to resolve this. Ahead of the strikes, Oxford University Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust said the industrial action would have a significant impact on services. All patients whose appointments were being cancelled would be contacted directly, a spokesman said.
Work has begun on installing the first new stained glass window in Oxford's cathedral for 100 years. The window, created by artist John Frontien, will tell the story of St. Francis of Assisi. It's expected to be unveiled in the north transept at Christchurch Cathedral later this year. As work progressed, all that could be glimpsed of the new work were animals and birds frolicking among foliage. Earlier this week, fragments of 17th century stained glass by Dutch-born window painter Abraham van Linge were removed from the medieval tracery. The glass was placed there during the Victorian restoration of the cathedral, which was overseen by leading architect of the era, Sir George Gilbert Scott. He was also responsible for London's Albert Memorial and St Pancras Station.
A trust responsible for protecting wildlife in Oxfordshire has launched its biggest ever fundraising appeal to tackle the nature and climate crisis in the region. The Berkshire, Buckinghamshire and Oxfordshire Wildlife Trust, BBOUT, has set up a nature recovery fund which aims to raise £3 million in 3 years to help to bring wildlife back and benefit climate and people. The urgent appeal follows the publication of the State of Nature 2023 report, which found that one in six British species are at risk of extinction, with birds, amphibians and reptiles under the most threat. Experts have warned habitat loss, climate change, pollution, intensive agriculture, housing developments and infrastructure projects such as HS2 are impacting hugely on local nature in Oxfordshire and surrounding counties. Estelle Bailey, Chief Executive of BBOUT, said, "Wildlife in our three counties is disappearing fast. Butterflies, wildflowers, hedgehogs, birds, frogs, bees, it's shocking. Unsustainable development and intensive farming are wiping wildlife off the map right here on our own doorsteps, and our climate is in chaos. We all need nature for food, fresh air and water, and for our own well-being. And we know we can't fix the climate crisis without restoring nature. The two go together. The choice is clear. No nature, no future, no us. But it's not too late. Our Nature Recovery Fund will help create more nature everywhere, which is good for climate and people in our three counties too. But we all need to do our bit urgently." The UK is one of the worst countries in the world for wildlife, with only 53% of its biodiversity left. The Nature Recovery Fund will target three critical areas of the Trust's work: nature, climate and people. The Trust hopes the fund will help protect more land to bring nature back, restore more woodland and floodplain to guard against climate change, and inspire communities and young people to care for wildlife. It would enable the Trust to work with more landowners, local charities, councils and farmers to put nature's recovery first. The appeal has been backed by lifelong nature lover and wildlife presenter, a Berkshire resident and BBOUT president, Steve Backshaw, who said, We are lucky enough to have otters, kingfishers and a whole array of aquatic bird and invertebrate life appearing across Berkshire, Buckinghamshire and Oxfordshire every day. This is part of the world I treasure, but we all have a responsibility to look after it. Sadly, the nature we know and love is under serious threat. The call of the wild is being silenced. That's why BeeBout is launching its biggest ever appeal with an ambitious goal. We want to bring nature back. It's that simple. He urged the public. In our countryside, our towns and our villages, we want to give nature a fighting chance. But we can't do that on our own. We need your help. Nature is sending us an SOS. Will you answer the call? BeeBout has more than 80 nature reserves, 150 staff and some 1,700 volunteers. It is aiming for 30% of land across the three counties to be well managed for wildlife by 2030 and said it needs as many people as possible to join the fight to achieve that. Money raised by the Nature Recovery Fund will give the Trust an eco-boost to fast-track nature's recovery. The Nature Recovery Fund got off to a flying start with £160,000 pledged by some of BeeBout's long-standing donors. For details of donating to the Nature Recovery Fund, see www.bbowt.org.uk/NRF. Supporters can also donate by texting RECOVERY in capital letters, followed by a donation amount to 70480*.
Oxford United secured all 3 points at home to 10-man Shrewsbury Town thanks to a first goal for the club from Finn Stevens, plus second-half strikes from Kieran Brown and Greg Lee. Stevens popped up at the back post just after the quarter of an hour mark, while Brown doubled the lead after an hour, not long after Joe Anderson received a second yellow card of the evening. Greg Lee then grabbed his third goal in 2 games after taking advantage of some questionable goalkeeping from Marco Morosi. Liam Manning made just the one alteration from the side, which won 3-1 at Stevenage as Mark Harris returned from his 3-game ban suspension to lead the line. Billy Bowden dropped back into a deeper role with Tyler Goodrum, the one who made way for Harris. United lined up in the same 3-4-2-1 system which served them so well against Stevenage, but in the opening stages against the Shrews, Manning's side were a little more ponderous in possession, unable to carve out any openings. With 10 minutes on the clock, Elliot Moore clipped a ball over the top for Harris to run into. However, the striker was nudged out of the way by Morgan Feeney. Tom Bayliss saw a left-wing cross intercepted in the penalty area by Brown before Bayliss then fired a shot into the arms of James Beadle in what was the first shot of the game, shortly after the quarter of an hour mark. The Ewes then took the lead from their first effort as Stevens arrived at the back post to thunder in Lee's dangerous cross. Former United centre-back Jake Dunkley swiped a shot over as the visitors looked for a response before Harris was guilty of missing a golden opportunity. The move started from a Shrews corner as the Ewes launched a rapid counter-attack. Ruben Rodriguez freed Harris through the middle, with the Welshman having plenty of time to pick his spot when one-on-one with Morosi. However, United's number 9 placed his effort wide. Just after the half-hour mark, Cameron Branigan worked himself space 20 yards out and forced Morosi to tip his shot over the crossbar. In the closing stages of the opening period, Branigan struck a 26-yard free kick into the wall, while Dunkley did well to block a Bowden effort from the centre of the penalty box. Goodrum replaced Bowden after the half-time break, with the visitors soon down to 10 men after Anderson was shown 2 yellow cards, both of which were fouls on Stevens. Moments after the sending off, Brown doubled the Ewes' advantage when he tapped in from close range following a Branigan free kick, swung in from the right-hand side. The game dropped off in intensity, although Branigan fizzed a 25-yard effort over the bar in a Hughes attack during the final quarter of an hour. Lee ensured United scored three goals for the fourth league game in a row when he won the ball out wide on the left after Morosi had strayed afar from his goal and sent the ball into the empty net.
Around 100 people attended a protest calling for safer streets and an end to dangerous driving in Oxford. The demonstration at the Plain Roundabout was part of a National Day of Action organised by the Safe Streets Now campaign. It followed the latest release of data on accidents and injuries by the Department for Transport. Residents group Coalition for Healthy Streets and Active Travel said, "Every day on roads in Britain, five people are killed. In Oxfordshire last year, 24 people were killed. These are not accidents. They're preventable events, mostly caused by careless or dangerous driving." COSAT's analysis of the figures found half of the deaths in Oxfordshire last year were in a car. Six were motorcyclists, three were pedestrians, two were cyclists and one was in a lorry. Thousands of people were also injured in road collisions, which they said cannot continue. Lily Martin, parent to a six-year-old who joined the protest at the roundabout, where Dr. Ling Felcher was killed in March 2022, told The Guardian, "We shouldn't fear that we might be killed every time we get on the roads. Drivers need to be aware when they get behind the wheel that they could kill someone, and they need to behave appropriately." Cycling campaign group Cyclox also attended the protest. It tweeted, "We seek an end to dangerous roads and dangerous driving. We want safe streets for all road users." Green Party councillor Emily Kerr, who took her children to the protest, said, "We have consistently seen over the years that all attempts to impose limits on driving attract strong emotions from a small minority of drivers. When seat belts were mandated, when drink driving was banned, when compulsory speed limits were introduced, and today when we see the furore over in Wales about the 25-mile-an-hour speed limit. But we know that all of these things, including LTNs, which reduce accidents by 50%, made roads safer, and there is broad-based support for all of them, as we consistently see in representative polling." Ms. Kerr said that the idea the protest was attended only by white middle-class people was completely ludicrous. She added, "We want to make it safe for everyone to walk and cycle around our great city." Oxfordshire County Council's Vision Zero strategy aims for zero road deaths and life-changing injuries by 2050, with a 50% reduction by 2030. Campaigners said the pace of change needs to run much faster and more needs to be done to change the design of roads to reduce risks for cyclists and pedestrians.
Halloween activities from pumpkin carving to storytelling are on offer this October half term at Blenheim Palace. The adventure play, Walled Garden and Great Court are being turned into a spooky hub with a range of activities for all ages. Children can take part in pumpkin decorating, join the haunted hunt to find hidden characters, and enjoy spooky storytelling led by adventure play guides. The Family Fun Day also includes witches' hat tossing and pumpkin pears. The walled garden will be decorated with hay bales and scarecrows, and a stilt walker will perform a daily wizard walkabout from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. The walled garden also hosts the Big Top, featuring spooktacular storytelling sessions, a family circus show at 12:30 and 3 p.m. and a circus workshop at 1:30 p.m. Fire performances will light up the Great Court at noon, 1 p.m. 2 p.m. and 3 p.m. Palace, park and gardens tickets are required for entry, Adventure play admission tickets are £7.
A keen fisherman landed a highly unexpected catch while fishing in the Thames. Tench used to be quite common on the Thames at Medley Weir, Donington and some other areas around Oxford, as well as Ensham and Wallingford. However, they have become increasingly uncommon and are only found in small isolated populations in abandoned backwaters, weed-choked margins and marinas. Victor Kamek, director of AV Boats, a boat hire business in Abingdon, landed the surprise catch last weekend. He said, "It is an extremely rare fish. Let's say you are a professional fisherman and you go out on a lovely day, you will get one in every 10 years. I caught it last Sunday afternoon at around 3 o'clock. I was using a float with a lobworm and an 8-pound line just below the Abingdon Bridge on a platform at AV Boats. It weighed 5 pounds 8 ounces and was 50 centimetres in length. The biggest tench ever caught by design in Britain weighed 15 pounds. Mr. Kamek, who also runs a fishing tackle shop in Abingdon, added, "I was extremely lucky. It was a beautiful sight. Once I realised what it was, I got very excited. When I landed it, I said, 'Wow, that's a tench.' And it was a 20-year-old fish."
Car washing duties at Wantage Fire Station have helped to raise money for Ukrainian firefighters. The base's crew used sponges, brushes and pressure washers as they cleaned vehicles in the yard of the station on Ormond Road for 4 hours on Saturday. Their efforts were part of a national car wash event run by the Five Firefighters Charity in partnership with FireAid to support firefighters in both the UK and Ukraine. Jill Tolfrey, Chief Executive of the Firefighters Charity, said, "We are delighted to partner with FireAid to support the health and well-being of Ukrainian firefighters who are facing unprecedented challenges in cities and communities across the country in the face of the devastating war."
Record numbers of students at a school in East Oxford have signed up to take part in this year's Bronze Duke of Edinburgh's Award. The programme kicked off at the Oxford Spire School last month, with students undertaking expedition training, map reading and orienteering. Head teacher Louise Cowley said, "I am incredibly proud that so many students have signed up for DOE this year. They are throwing themselves into the challenge with courage and determination that will serve them well in the future." Oxford Spire students are among hundreds of thousands who will take part in the award this year, which encourages participants to learn new skills and build confidence and resilience. The D of E Award was founded in the UK in 1956 by the late Prince Philip, then Duke of Edinburgh, and is widely recognised as the world's leading youth achievement award.
A school celebrated diversity as it recorded that more than 50 languages are spoken in the homes of pupils' families. The annual International Day at St Joseph's Catholic Primary School in Headington, Oxford, gave the children an opportunity to highlight their different nationalities. Children attended school in national dress or in the colours of national flags. They spoke about their connections to different places, the languages they speak, the places they've visited, and where their extended families and friends may live. The day culminated in a social event with a sharing of national dishes at a family gathering. Head teacher Jess Tweedy said, "Diversity forms a key part of our curriculum, along with academic excellence and taking action with our learning. It was lovely to see so many children enthusiastically talking about their global connections." An Oxfordshire MP's interview on a UK-wide political podcast was interrupted by her own cat. Liberal Democrat MP for Oxford West and Abingdon, Leila Moran, appeared on the Save the UK podcast, only to be upstaged by her 21-year-old black and white cat, Murphy. Broadcaster Grace Blakely and journalist Coco Khan were grilling the MP when the interview was paused by the sounds of Miss Moran's pet. Miss Moran said of Murphy on the podcast, "She's very fluffy and black and white, so if you turn her upside down, she looks like a pint of Murphy's." The MPs discussed tactical voting and told the hosts that her party definitely won't be going into coalition with the Tories. Former Oxford United striker Jefferson Louis has found himself a new club, the 43rd of his career. The 44-year-old striker has left Wanarama National League, Southside Slough Town, where he was a player and performance coach, to join Beaconsfield Town in Southern League, Premier South. Louis, who has also played for Oxford City, Bamber United and North Lee during a remarkable career, will combine playing and coaching at Beaconsfield. He has already played five times for the Rams this season, scoring twice. Manager John Underwood told the club website, "Jeff is a fantastic character, a real winner, and has already had a major influence on our dressing room when he's been with us." Louis joined Slough in June after a spell with Tame United. He made five appearances for the Berkshire side. He scored 10 goals in 64 games while a youth player between 2004, and is fondly remembered for netting the only goal of the game in an FA Cup second round tie at home to Swindon Town. Television cameras in the dressing room famously caught him celebrating drawing Arsenal away in the third round as he accidentally showed his backside to the nation while he sported just a towel. An art studio is crowdfunding in a bid to expand the range of workshops it can offer to the public and spread the joy of creativity even further. Jessie's Art Shed, JAS, in Ensham wants a destination place offering one big location for all things creative. The studio, which opened 8 years ago, hosts classes and workshops for all ages and stocks a range of art products. Upcoming events include a Hogwarts Christmas children's workshop, meet and make for women of all ages, and a Christmas social night for people in their 20s and 30s. Founder Jessie Wheely, who moved from Essex to near Whitney aged 14 and attended Henry Box, did her foundation diploma at Oxford Brookes. She said, "I received an offer at Bournemouth Arts University to study illustration, but decided to take a gap year first, which is when I began offering classes from my parents' shed in Standlake. The classes grew fast, so I ended up deferring my place at university to give my business a proper go. 8 years later, and I never went." At the end of 2018, she married Ollie, who quit his job the day they got back from honeymoon, to work with her as creative and administrative director. Together they moved into their own shop in Ensham High Street in June 2019 and 3 years later opened a second shop attached to Yarnton Garden Centre. Demand for classes and workshops has grown rapidly. The couple and their team of four want to seize the opportunity to move into the space next door, which has recently become available. The community is already rallying behind them by donating to the crowdfunder and getting kitted out with JAS merchandise, which will help towards renovating the new space. Mrs. Wheely said, "We've just made the tough decision to close our Yarnton shop because of the huge opportunity of taking on the space next door to our Ensham shop. Our dream has always been one destination place that's a real creative hub for the community. Me and my team are beyond excited for this next step and to build on what is already a welcoming space for everyone to enjoy. We would like somewhere with community at the heart of it, somewhere parents can gather and create with their toddlers, where children are encouraged to use their imaginations to the fullest, and where young people and adults alike can forge friendships, build confidence, develop skills, and most importantly, have fun." The Oxford climate activist who was carried from the Lord's cricket field by England ace Johnny Bairstow has been convicted of aggravated trespass. Pictures of Daniel Knorr, 21, under wicketkeeper Bairstow's arm went around the world after the student and two others ran onto the pitch during an Ashes game. And giving evidence at the City of London Magistrates Court on Thursday of last week, Noor told the district judge he'd tried to strike up a conversation with the 34-year-old athlete, but he wasn't interested. The Just Stop Oil protest carried out by Noor, Judith Murray, 69, and Jacob Bourne, 27, stopped play during the match between England and Australia on June the 28th as security and ground staff cleaned up an orange powder that was thrown on the pitch and ensured the ground was not damaged. The trio, who said they wanted to create headlines for their climate change protest and did not want to cause disruption or damage the pitch, were found guilty after a trial at the City of London Magistrates Court. England player Johnny Bairstow carried Noor off the pitch while champagne corks and fruit were thrown by cricket fans at Bourne as he was led off the field, and Murray was tackled before she could reach the wicket and held down on the grass. District Judge Nita Minas said she was satisfied the trio had breached the well-publicised rules which state that ticket holders cannot trespass, go on to the field of play or stage demonstrations. Animal-loving children were thrilled to get close up with exotic reptilian visitors. Pupils at Wootton St Peter's Primary School were treated to a visit by Radley College Science Department's animal collection alongside a lesson delivered by biologist Michael Noon. The children got to hold and observe a python and a bearded lizard, the latter of which was rescued from nearby Abingdon a few years ago. A hedgehog also dropped in. Kuina Phillips, deputy head and year 5 and 6 teacher at the primary school, said, "The kids absolutely loved it. It was really nice." Some who were apprehensive at first were holding one of the snakes by the end of the lesson, and it was great to see some of the shyer children coming out of their shells. One year 6 pupil said, "I felt like the whole jungle had come to me."
That was the last news item for this week. If you have any comments about this week's Oxtalk edition, either email us at mail@oxtalk.org.uk or telephone Margaret on 07496 062 280. Please leave your name and telephone number so that we can return your call. There are several different ways to listen to Oxtalk. As usual, we'll be sending out USB memory sticks in their yellow wallets. You can listen to the current week and the previous month's editions by going to our website, www.oxtalk.org.uk, where you can either stream the news straight away or download it should you wish to listen later on using an alternative device. You can also use Alexa, and here is Guy Lawful explaining how to set it up.
Notice to listeners of Oxtalk who use a smart speaker to access our service. There are new instructions for anyone who listens to Oxtalk using Alexa. To listen to Oxtalk in this way, you now have to use the Talking Newspaper skill. First, you need to enable it. Simply say, "Alexa, enable Talking Newspaper." Then, to listen to Oxtalk, please follow this procedure.
Alexa, open Talking Newspaper.
Welcome to your Talking Newspaper skill. Please say the name of a newspaper or a town or city you would like to hear from.
Oxford.
Here are the following newspapers nearest to Oxford. Please pick a newspaper name. Oxford and District Talking News, Whitney Talking News Latest Edition, Whitney Talking News Previous Edition, Whitney Talking Magazine, Wallingford, and District Talking Newspaper. Or do you want to hear more?
Oxford and District Talking News.
Do you want to listen to Oxford and District Talking News?
Yes.
This is Oxford and District Talking News.
If you have problems listening to Oxtalk in this way, it could be due to the way that your Alexa device is set up. Please check the settings with whoever set up your device in the first place. If you still have problems, please contact Oxtalk and we will try to help.